I'm delighted now to welcome Pamela Christie. She is the author of the book Dead Lizards Dance, A Tale of Love, Murder, and Witchery in Old Santa Fe. And her first book, The King's Lizard, was the winner of the Zia Book Award of the New Mexico Press Women. And she will be speaking at the Fall Book Fiesta of Santa Fe at the Clear Light Book Gallery on Saturday, October 24th. It's from 10 to 4. It's a free event at 851 West San Mateo Road in Santa Fe. Welcome, Pamela, to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for having me here today.
So this book is set in the late 18th century Santa Fe.
1782,
the Kingdom of New Mexico. And it's so interesting that we are talking to you right after we talked to Margaret Moore Booker, who's talking about the architecture throughout this period. And like that, this book gives you such a sense of the underpinnings of the place that we're living in now.
Thank you. I agree.
Let's talk about your character, your narrator, Nando. Who is he? How did you develop this character?
Two different questions. Nando is a 22-year-old young man, boy, right on the cusp of both, whose father was a Spanish don, wealthy by New Mexico standards, gentry. His mother was that man's Ute slave. So Nando is a half-breed, and as such, he doesn't belong to either culture particularly well, although he was taught to read and write by his Spanish stepmother. So he's a step ahead of most half-breeds. And in the first book, when Governor Anza finds this out about him, he is thrilled to have somebody who can be a vector across cultural and economic levels, somebody who could actually speak Ute, therefore Comanche, somebody who can speak Spanish, even a little Latin. He's got somebody that he can use in his spy network in this young man.
And use him he does. What's wonderful about this book is, many wonderful things, but it starts out with a murder. You aren't even a few pages in, and you've got a dead man hanging from the rafters.
You do indeed. There are certain lines I come across when I'm reading history that just catch me, and I'm off and running with a story. And one of them was that one of the typical ways to kill a witch in those times and in other times was to hang them over a beam and by their elbows behind them and leave them there. Pretty grisly. Definitely caught my attention. Somehow, when I read these lines, a novel starts to form. And you're holding it in your hands.
That's right. So let's talk about the witchcraft aspect of it. What, at that point, defined a witch? And how did you do the research to find that out?
Well, happily, there are excellent books. Mark Simmons has written at least one about witchcraft in New Mexico. What I got interested in was what happened to women who were outcasts, who were on the margins of society. And in that time, many women were captured as young girls or young women and brought into households. And they were taken out of their own culture. And suddenly, they just were other. I mean, they had a different name, a different religion. They had no protection of their family or their tribe. What happened to these women? And many women were forced into servitude out of the pueblos, and often put first of all to work in the palace of the governors, and very quickly were impregnated and were adrift in society. I mean, nobody was supporting them or their children, and I have never been able to find out if they were allowed to go home to their pueblo people if they got the chance with their Spanish offspring. I think probably in some cases they were and in other cases they weren't. So there are all these women, and there are also the poor and the marginally mentally ill ones and widows. What happens to them? And in many cases, as in all cultures, somebody different is deemed to be a witch. And there was just a horrible article in our paper the other day about children in Africa who are being tormented for this. So I was interested in this question. And there's been an excellent book written called The Witches of Abiquiu, and it goes into a whole witch exorcism problem in Abiquiu in about 1764, which is almost the time of my book. So it was a big issue in this country in those days, in this territory.
Now, some of it was, as you point out, based on just simply the fact of otherness and all the fear that goes around with that. But also, there were women who were herbalists or who were healers or who did things outside of the confines of Catholicism.
Absolutely, and they were at risk all the time. The Spanish Inquisition was actually at work in New Mexico looking for people who combined healing with ceremony and considered that absolutely illegal and grounds for all kinds of punishment. And that comes up in this book. And yet I try not to make it too gruesome. I mean, my women are fun, and two of them happen to be the lovers of my sleuth, Nando. We get to know these women as they're walking through the mountains, digging their herbs. And we see how they have to fight for their survival. And another thing that really interested me is some women chose to be known as witches. They got power from that. And I was very interested in that question alongside this general concern.
So, of course, we don't want to give away too much of the plot of the book, because if you do that to a murder mystery, then you're just a bad person.
Thank you.
But there is a lot about, and I always wonder when people are writing historical fiction, how much accuracy they're striving for. In other words, were you trying to really imitate the way people spoke, the way they dressed, the way they had their hair, the way their houses were? I mean, obviously you have to be accurate on what vehicles or animals they rode and all that kind of thing. I mean, it's a huge research project rife with opportunities for gross errors.
Yeah, there have been a few, too. I think I learned some of the languaging in the first book. I mean, I would try to make them sound somewhat contemporary, because I don't think people actually have changed that much over the last 250 years. I mean, they're still having fights with their girlfriends and annoyed at their mothers and, you know, struggling to earn a living. And I need language that it makes a modern reader relate to them. But I also couldn't say, zip your mouth, because they didn't have zippers then. And I learned this as I was writing. And I think the second book is more finely honed for that. The language is closer. And I tried to base it on real history, yet the whole book is rank fiction. Some historians object to that, others love it. I made up the story. Governor Anza was real, and he's in this book. There are a couple of other characters who did live in those times, but generally speaking, it's all something, well, we live in Santa Fe, all something I channeled. Does that work?
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
But I mean, a lot of authors, I mean, forget about the mystical New Age nonsense aspect of it, but there are a lot of authors who get their ideas from some weird place, and the novel just kind of unfolds by itself in a way that it's not just conscious invention.
I think both happen. I mean, there was a lot of conscious invention with this one, because I really wanted this book to get off on a racing good start, and I plotted it more than I did the first one. But then your characters take over. I mean, you find them in bed with the wrong people. You find them at the wrong end of the county, on the wrong animal. And you've got to rein them in from time to time. I mean, they get characters of their own, and they start to take off on you. And that's really fun when that happens.
One of the things that I know that you're interested in is this whole phenomenon of book clubs. Have you found that book clubs are taking up your book and reading it and then talking about it?
Well, I hope they do with this one. I certainly had great success and fun with book clubs in the past with The King's Lizard. I like to go and talk about the book and let the women just have at me, which they do sometimes. But I think book groups, book clubs are the sort of great underground intellectual stream in this country. Women and men, too, in the book groups, but mostly women, the ones I go to, are really studying and thinking and supporting literature and books as they do it. And I love to work with them. And one of my most, and feel free to call me, PR Christie in the phone book, if you want me to talk to your book group. And another thing that I love doing is speaking to classrooms of kids. And I was
What kind of questions are children asking you?
Well, I went to one classroom in Las Vegas, New Mexico, eighth graders. This is for the first book. And they came into the room after I was sitting there for a minute, dressed in the costumes of my characters.
Oh my goodness.
It blew my mind. And the children came up to me, one of them dressed as Nando, and said, "Why did you make me the most important person in the book?" And another person who was dressed as the prostitute Rosa said, "Why did you kill me?" And there I was being interrogated by my own characters. It was a fabulous morning. So
that's one great teacher they've got there who's having them act this out.
John McLeod at the Charter School up in Las Vegas. But anyway, I love talking to kids. I think this book is more suited to high school kids than grade school kids. But I'm also a tour guide at Golondrinas, and I work with the children out there. And you talk about architecture. I mean, our architecture in 1782 was mud. Mud and sticks and stones.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes falling on your head.
Often, yeah.
Pamela Christie is author of the book Dead Lizards Dance, A Tale of Love, Murder, and Witchery in Old Santa Fe. And she will be at the Clearlight Book Gallery on Saturday, October 24th, it's an event called the Fall Book Fiesta from 10 to 4 in the afternoon. It's free, and it's at 851 West San Mateo Road.
I think there are going to be about 30 authors there, and if you're getting started on your Christmas shopping, here's a chance to get something eclectic and delicious at the same time. There will really be an array of books there.
You know, it's a really good point, actually, just in terms of the purely shopping element of this, which is that just like a flea market or a craft show where you get one-of-a-kind items, your book isn't one-of-a-kind, but it's also something that you may not find in a big chain bookstore or something like that. It may not have the distribution. So if you actually go to an event like this, you can meet all sorts of authors and get books that you wouldn't readily find otherwise.
There are very interesting people writing books in Santa Fe. Last time I was carried by boarders here, and I sold over 200 books of The King's Lizard. And this time when I went in to get distribution of the new book, Dead Lizards Dance, they said that their corporate policy had changed and they couldn't take any local books. So there I was. And they gave me a number to call to see if I could discuss this with the main boarder's office. And I called that number and it hung up on me. I was flabbergasted.
There's your corporate policy.
There's your corporate policy. So think of all the people in this country who are writing really fine things who are excluded from the big corporate chains under a policy like that. No wonder they're going out of business.
Well, Pamela Christie, we look forward to seeing you at the Santa Fe Fall Book Fiesta, and thanks again for being with us.
Well, it's always fun to be with you, Mary Charlotte.
And we hope you come back soon.
Thanks.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in just a moment.